Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
And my guest this morning is CJ Box, whose latest offering is The Disappeared. It's the 18th installment of his number one New York Times bestselling Joe Pickett series. Pickett's, of course, a Wyoming game warden, and this time around he's investigating the disappearance of Kate Shelford Longdon, a British woman, with a great British name, by the way, who's been staying at a luxury resort called the Silver Creek Ranch. His old friend Nate Romanowski's back and has Joe looking into these new federal regulations that limit the ability of falconers to hunt with eagles. There's also a lumber mill where the locals smell burning flesh. Lots and lots of stuff going on here, but it makes for a fantastic read. CJ, you set this book in the Platte Valley area, Saratoga specifically, in southern Wyoming. Up to now, you've always described that area, but attributed it to a fictional place in the Bighorn Mountains area of northern Wyoming. Why mention Saratoga by name this time around?
Well, as you know, throughout the series, Joe Pickett has moved around the state of Wyoming for different cases and situations, and in this case, I wanted to use the real place, the Saratoga, like I've used Yellowstone and Jackson Hole and other places in the past, and rather than kind of have the fictional veneer over the top, actually name the names and the places and be very accurate with the locations and so on. So it's fun to do. Joe Pickett always returns to his fictional home, but when he goes out and about, he goes to a real place.
And this book also shows us the guest ranch culture of the area. Joe's daughter Sheridan is now working at this guest ranch. What's the interplay like between the wealthy dude ranch guests and the locals?
Well, I always find it very interesting because, especially in the world of the really high-end kind of guest ranch, dude ranches that have wealthy, like celebrity guests and politicians and lots of internationals. And it's fascinating to me that people will come from a long ways and spend an awful lot of money to kind of play cowboy for a week and unplug. That's one of the things now that the Dude Ranch people talk about, that they're offering, the ability for A-list type people to actually get off the internet, get off social media, and sometimes it's very painful for them for a few days, but then generally they consider it one of the best vacations of their lives.
Is this one of those deals like what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas? Is it the same way at these dude ranches?
To some degree, yeah. I know that I live in Wyoming, in southern Wyoming, and there's one of the guest ranches around here is considered one of the best resorts in the world. And I know that some of the employees sign non-disclosure agreements, that kind of thing, so that when they have celebrities in town, it's not well known.
So what kind of things are they doing at these dude ranches in real life when a celebrity comes there?
Well, it's the same thing that anybody does on a dude ranch. And they ride horses, they go fly fishing, they do whitewater rafting. They're fed very well, and they might go shooting, that kind of thing. But it's kind of traditional old activities that they do. It's not real high tech.
Why was it important in this book to make the missing woman, Kate, a British woman, as opposed to somebody from the States?
Well, because one of the interesting aspects of international tourism to dude ranches in the West is that a large number of the guests are, in fact, British women. And it's kind of well known within the tourism industry that a lot of the women come over to hopefully to maybe hook up with a young cowboy while they're here. So there seems to be more British women than other women from other countries that come by themselves to dude ranches.
In the book here, Joe sets up shop in this historic Hotel Wolf in downtown Saratoga. The place really exists. How does this real-life location enhance the reading experience for the people that are actually familiar with that location?
Well, I think a lot of readers, I love to read books that are set in real places, and if possible, if I can get to that place, go visit the locations. And I think there's a lot of readers like that. And so for one, I think on the one hand, it enhances the experience of reading it because it's describing a real place. And on the other hand, it might encourage some people to kind of walk in the footsteps of Joe Pickett. I know that I've talked to a lot of people who have gone to the locations in Yellowstone and Jackson Hole, for example, that are described, and they go to them later and kind of enjoy it, reread the books. And that's something I like to be able to do.
How close of attention to detail do you have to pay as an author so you don't get emails or tweets or whatever from locals who say, no, this particular room number isn't next to this room, or this stairway doesn't exist in this particular hotel?
I try to be as accurate as possible. I just put on my old journalist hat when I'm doing the research for every book, and when I go to the location, I take a lot of notes, make sure that that's accurate. And then certain passages where I'm maybe not sure about locations and the kind of thing you describe, I'll run those passages by the owner or somebody who's familiar with the area to make sure that I get it right. And, I make mistakes on occasion, and luckily I'm able to correct those in subsequent editions, but luckily that doesn't happen a lot.
Do you have to get releases from the owner to use their locations?
I don't have official releases, no. I generally let them know what I'm doing, and usually they're enthusiastic participants in it. But if it's something that, I kind of know about, not to go over the line on those kind of things, and certainly not to denigrate a place by name.
Joe Pickett's a game warden, and he's one of only 50 or so game wardens in all of Wyoming. And Wyoming's a weird state. It's 100,000 square miles, but it only has 23 counties. So you have game wardens investigating crime in very desolate areas with very little backup, if any, from other agencies. How does that desolateness of a game warden's life and existence affect their ability to investigate crime effectively?
Well, it makes them approach everything a little bit differently, for, like you say, because it's so remote, and the fact that almost everybody a game warden encounters in the field is armed, they have to deal with things a little bit differently. And, they tend not to throw their weight around, be too provocative, but also get the information. Most people out in the field, hunters and fishermen are ethical people. They tend to enjoy interacting with the game warden and learning more about the area and hearing gossip and that kind of thing. So, but at the same time, a game warden is very heavily armed, and they rarely have backup, like you say. They have to handle things on their own, and they deal with them. They've got to be pretty good sociologists as well as law enforcement officers.
We're talking with C.J. Box about his brand new Joe Pickett novel, The Disappeared. It's available now wherever your fine books are sold from the good folks at Putnam. We've seen, C.J., over and over again throughout this country, certain people have a distrust of law enforcement. Some of the criticism is legitimate, some is not. In The Disappeared, as the author, you note that people trust game wardens. How do the game wardens, is it just their personality that sort of keeps them above this criticism that other law enforcement officers and agencies feel?
I think it's that and the fact that they're not only law enforcement officers. Game wardens are also involved in biology decisions, landowner relations. They're the people that are called out if there's somebody finds a dead deer in their yard. I think people tend to look at them a little bit differently than somebody who's solely there to catch bad guys. And part of the job of a game warden is to be involved in the community and live there and participate. So a lot of times they're not so much viewed as an outsider as an insider. And as far as getting involved in other crimes goes, that's pretty true to life. Game wardens can be called on by local sheriffs or highway patrol or anyone to help assist with things. And they're often involved in cases that are not game and fish related.
Is it kind of like, and I know it's not the small town feel of the Andy Griffith Show, but everybody always called him Andy in the show. Nobody ever called him Sheriff Taylor unless it was the mayor or something like that. Is that the same way here, that everybody knows the game warden by the first name?
You know what? That's a good question. Nobody's ever asked that question, but that's exactly right. In the area where I live, we've got a little small ranch. The game warden, everybody just called him Biff. So it's not Warden Biff or Officer Biff. It's just Biff.
Well, the natural backdrop of Wyoming provides us with this look of the beauty, the cruelty, and the balance of the natural world. It would seem like that's something that somebody has to see in order to understand, but you seem to capture it with words. So how do you go about doing that and capturing with just words to let us as readers paint this mental picture?
Well, I just try to set the scene as quickly and as efficiently as I can, and using all senses. What does it look like? What is the light like? What does it smell like? How cold is it? those kind of things without going on and on and on. And I think that that really kind of it enhances the story by making the environment kind of a character in it.
One of the things I've learned about readers of fiction is oftentimes they demand more accuracy from the fiction writer than they will from their government officials or politicians. When you hear from readers who may notice something in your books that doesn't necessarily match their own experience in Wyoming, what's that like for you? Does it ever open your eyes, or is it possible that people have two different experiences of the same area?
Well, it's usually not a different experience. Or somebody pointing out an error in the description or something like that. It's usually more technical. And I had, you know, something, especially when it comes to weapons. There's so many gun guys who consider themselves experts that, you know, an error made 10 years ago in a book I will still hear about, even though it's since been corrected. They get very, very technical about the, you know, calibers and velocities and that kind of thing. And so it's not so much the area or the location, but things like that.
One of the things I love about Joe Pickett is he's not some super cop protagonist. I mean, he's living paycheck to paycheck. He doesn't have a lot of emotional baggage, and he makes mistakes like we all do. But people love this Western archetype for what he is. Are there things that you'd like to have Joe do, but he just can't do it because it doesn't fit his pedigree?
Well, I think the answer is yes. I mean, he's very Dudley Do-Right like, as his buddy Nate Romanowski called him. Joe goes by the book and does his best, but the previously mentioned Nate Romanowski, his buddy, an outlaw falconer who packs one of the largest handguns in the world, is often around to kind of help Joe tie up things in Nate's particular way, and that's usually a way that Joe would not do it.
The idea of a Western character like Joe is a very uniquely American thing. I mean, we have the Old West. Nobody else seems to have that. What do you hear from your international readers? Because I know it sells great overseas, that why Joe resonates so well with them. And does their love of him differ from country to country?
I think it does a little bit in that what I hear when I go overseas is more about the location. It's considered very exotic location, so unlike you know, Europe, or, you know, it's kind of like Australia in a way, but certainly in Europe. And what the questions are generally about the area, they're about public lands, which are something that's unusual in most parts of the world, and also about the gun culture. They can't believe that everybody in these books has weapons, but that's true to life.
One of the unique things about your series is that it takes place in real time. Joe ages a year as the times go on. When we first read Open Season in 2001, Sheridan was 7, and now she's an adult at this dude ranch. How does Joe age in your own mind, both mentally and physically?
Well, I do keep track of what age he is and what things have happened. I think over the years he's gotten a little bit more cynical, a little bit harder bark on him than originally. But I just try to keep it, you know, I know that someone who reads a series for this many years and this many books has to kind of suspend disbelief when they think that, you know, all these adventures could not happen with one guy. So in every other aspect of the book, I try to keep them as true to life as possible and as natural, and have the characters grow and mature in real life ways, and just kind of keep in mind what stage he is in his life. He's, you know, his knees are starting to hurt when he jumps off of a horse, that kind of thing. And just keep it as real as I can.
You're in Wyoming, beautiful country there. The books describe it beautifully. I'm in Iowa. State of Iowa claimed one of your daughters for her career, right?
That's right, yeah. And she loves it. Yeah, she's an attorney in Des Moines and absolutely loves the state, loves her job, loves the city. And we come visit her quite often.
I know she went to Drake Law School. What attracted her to Drake?
Well, a very good scholarship. And she interned with the law firm while going to school and then got employed by that firm, and now she's with a different firm, but doing very well, still loving it.
Joe Pickett's been optioned for a television series. What goes into the decision-making process for you when you decide to turn your own creation over to someone else for development?
Well, you know, I've had some bad experiences with producers who made all sorts of promises and then started to go different directions, and we were able to get out of it. But in this particular case, I was able to meet with the executives in charge, and their vision of a Joe Pickett television series was exactly the same as mine. And they'd read every book. They kind of had the ideas they wanted to do it. And everybody they're getting involved with the production, they're interviewing real extensively to find out, to make sure that they're on the same page. So I'm very optimistic about it and pretty excited about it. It's very early in the process. We don't know what network yet or how many episodes, that sort of thing. But it's setting up very well.
All right. Well, the latest Joe Pickett novel is The Disappeared by C.J. Box. It's available now wherever your fine books are sold from the good folks at Putnam. Go check it out. You won't be the only one because these things sell a lot of books. C.J., fantastic offering here. Thanks for putting it out, and thanks for joining us today.
And thank you for having me on again. I really appreciate it.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.
Down in the canyon, cottonwood whispers.